It's my entire life. I consume it all the time and I make it and live and breathe it. I smell like it, which is much better than smelling like a zookeeper. I wouldn't have an existence without it.
This is The Producers. I'm Danny Vallant. Deb Makin quit two careers. First, she was a zoologist, then a wedding planner, to become a bean-to-bar chocolate maker. She is completely transparent about the whole chocolate making process at her Brunswick factory Ratio Cocoa Roasters, educating, myth-busting, and offering plenty of tastings. As one of only 35 bean-to-bar producers in Australia, there's a lot of work to do to awaken the public to the delights of terroir-driven, ethically sourced chocolate. Deb is ready for the challenge.
Hi, I'm Deb Makin, the owner of Ratio Cocoa Roasters. We're a bean-to-bar chocolate-making company in Brunswick, Melbourne. Bean-to-bar means that we actually source our own cocoa beans and then perform all the steps to make chocolate. Personally, I don't drink alcohol or coffee or smoke. Chocolate's always been my vice and my go-to. I'm actually a zoologist by trade, so I've lived overseas for 7 years, been to over 50 countries, lived in some small African villages, and the first thing I must have is chocolate. So I've visited a lot of chocolate places just by, you know, the need to consume chocolate. And then, yeah, just got more interested from that point of view and started, I think like most people, you consume something, but you don't really think where it comes from. So then started to learn about that there is actually no such thing as Swiss chocolate. There is no cocoa trees in Switzerland. And then started realizing about the ethics and how it all comes about. So Solomon Islands was the first place that I got to see a real cocoa farm and the cocoa beans, which is fantastic. Being in the South Pacific, us Australian chocolate makers always try to support that region. I still get excited to see a cocoa pod, the beautiful colours and the fruits in it, and then to meet the farmers and, we generally deal with small farm holding families. So it's literally only one or two families working together. And they grow all their own food. So within the cocoa trees is always coconuts for shade and banana trees and then all the tropical fruit in those regions. So they're all, very self-sustained on the properties, regardless of what they're growing.
There's no traditional career path that ends with bean to bar Brunswick chocolate maker. Deb shares her circuitous journey to chocolate entrepreneur.
Yes, so my career path's a little strange. So I always knew I wanted to be a zoologist. So you need to do a Bachelor of Science. And I did do that for 10 years. And then circumstances changed and I actually became a wedding planner. So I went from gorillas to bridezillas. And so chocolate making is actually my third career. I've always been in hospitality as a means of earning money. So, as a 15-year-old, I started waitressing and always had a job in hospitality, even zookeeping. I tend to go into careers with terrible money. Zookeeping's bad money, wedding planning's bad money. So I would always have a waitressing gig on the side to fund myself. So I was aware of hospitality. My brother's a coffee roaster. He's in the industry. My parent had restaurants before, so very familiar with that sort of scenario. But as I don't drink coffee, we were seeing this trend whenever the coffee my brother's buyers would go and buy beans, they would always come back with this lovely single origin chocolate. Sounds like a stereotype, but literally everyone in coffee has a cousin in cacao, so you always find coffee growers with cacao and vice versa. So yeah, we started seeing this trend and my brother's like, well, you don't like coffee, maybe we should investigate this sort of chocolate world. So it sort of came about from there and then spent sort of 2 years researching, visiting some of the chocolate makers over in America and visiting the Solomons and the farms. And, yeah, took a long time to sort of, learn and figure it out. We opened in 2017, so 6.5 years now.
Cacao expresses the places it comes from and the growing conditions that have produced it. Deb is deeply steeped in where her beans are grown and the ethics of how they've been sourced.
Yeah, so most people are under the illusion that Swiss and Belgium chocolate is the best. I think we all grow up with that, and just I grew up at the era when Milka was released, and obviously Lindt has done a worldwide campaign in the last 20 years. But there is actually no cocoa trees grown in Europe. So 70% of the world's cocoa comes out of West Africa, which unfortunately doesn't have a very good human rights child slave labour issue. So, realised that no cacao is actually like coffee and wine, that it tastes completely different from the different regions it comes from. And we should be focusing on that and looking at the beans. So bean to bar chocolate movement is kind of two sides. It's clearly the ethical side. So we know who we're sourcing from, and we know that the farmer is being paid a fair price, well above the world market price. So there's the ethical side of, you know, actually getting the product. And then there's the education side that, just like coffee and wine, depending on the cocoa's origin, you're going to taste a difference in that flavour. And that comes down to a combination of terra, rainfall, altitude, fermentation and drying methods, the skill of the farmer especially, and then at the end, finally, the skill of the chocolate maker. But that's what I love seeing. I run factory tours in my facility, and when people smell the different cacaos and, you know, smell different things, and you might like some and not others, and then when we finally do our tasting and, oh, this one tastes like fruit and this one tastes like rum and raisin, and actually realizing that commercial chocolate, you're not actually tasting cacao. It's a very different product. You know, it's chemicals and emulsifiers, and it's all set to be the same. So bean to bar world, you're going to taste some weird things just like you would in wine or coffee.
Chocolate is an amazing product in that the raw material and the finished confection are so far apart. Deb talks through the all-natural but finely calibrated process of getting from bean to bar.
Yeah, so we first get our beans in from origin, and we physically hand sort through them. So if you ever walk past our facility, you'll see myself or my staff standing in the front window sorting through, and people are like, oh my gosh, you do that by hand. But it's actually quite mindful. Your eyes become quite used to it. You flick through. Like if I have a good quality bean, I can do like 30 kilos an hour. So it's not actually that slow. And that's just a quality control step. Again, that's personal choice. Some companies don't do sorting. Some companies do it a lot more in depth than ourselves. But we're basically obviously looking for foreign objects. So, you know, you might have fluff from the bag or stones or twigs, and then any, you know, faulty beans. So that's sort of a quick quality control before we pop them in our roaster. So most people think we're a coffee shop because the coffee roaster looks very similar to a coffee roaster, but cacao roasters are different. We work at a much lower temperature. So we roast the bean, and then we actually have to get the skin off. So coffee arrives without the skin, so they don't have to deal with that, but we actually have to get our skin off. So this is probably the coolest piece of equipment we have in the facility. And because I knew I was going to be on show and have the public through, we actually built ours in glass, so you can see it all happening. And that's a process of a vacuum and airflow, which sucks off the lighter skin to the heavier nib. So finally, we've got our cacao and we can start making chocolate. So then we move over to our stone grinders. So everyone assumes that you add heat or you add water to make chocolate. We only use two ingredients, cocoa beans and raw cane sugar. So you know that sugar is dry and crunchy and cacao is dry and crunchy. So we just put them in these stone grinders for 24 hours and it naturally brings out the natural oils, and that turns into the smooth chocolate. So it's a patience game. And then finally, when we have nice smooth chocolate, we come to the evil part of chocolate making, which is tempering. Anyone who has tried tempering knows how frustrating it is. So you should be kind to yourself if you give it a go. But this is where it's a very important process where we get the chocolate to have that lovely snap when you break it, a nice shine, the right texture in your mouth, and most importantly, it doesn't melt on the shelf. Tempering is a process of heating and cooling the chocolate, which changes the crystalline structure. There's five different types of crystallization, and we want to get to that crystallization that gives you the snap, the shine, the shelf stability. And every chocolate has a completely different tempering point. This is why it's a frustrating process. So you would have seen it on cooking shows, especially like MasterChef, whenever they want to get rid of competitors, they do a chocolate tempering challenge. That's because it's really difficult, and especially when you're under a time constraint like you are on those shows. So dark chocolate tempers anywhere between 30 and 32 degrees, and milk chocolate between 28 and 30. So you have to heat the chocolate up to break the crystallization, and then you slowly cool it down to the particular tempering point that you want. So you can imagine if you go too far and you cool it down, then you have to heat it up and go back and forth and back. And so it's this frustrating process to get it at the right point. So it is an important reason why you do it, but it is a very frustrating process. You can cheat with a thermomix, though, as you're aware. So you can give that a little try. And then we come to our wrapping. Obviously, wrapping is a big part of chocolate. That's what we spend a majority of our time doing. So we have a wrapping station there as well. So we're all glass. You can, even if you're not on a tour with us, you can easily walk along and understand the concept of how we make our chocolate.
Deb has tasted chocolate with origins in every cocoa-growing region in the world. Does she have any favourites?
Well, being a zoologist, of course, I have a very soft spot for Zorzal cacao, which is from the Dominican Republic, and it's actually a bird sanctuary. So you're doing two of my favourite things. They're actually doing conservation and they're doing cacao. So we've always stocked their beans since the day we opened. And then obviously a soft spot for the South Pacific. Most of the chocolate makers in Australia, we do obviously want to support the Southern Hemisphere. So for example, we've got Solomon Island beans, and being the first place that I really understood cacao, that's a soft spot for me as well. And then the beans coming out of Vanuatu, I love their flavours. It, like, people can be arrogant and think it's the chocolate maker. I'm really much like, it's really the skill of the farmer and that development. Obviously, rainfall affects the taste a lot as well, naturally in the cacao, but as the fermentation and the drying process and just getting that full flavour out, like, you know, it'll be slightly fruity one year and the next year it'll be really fruity because they've developed that tone through. So that's why it's nice to keep working with the same farmers. You kind of grow together and learn the skill together. So not drinking coffee or alcohol, sort of, like I said, chocolate was always my go-to and my treat. And living in different countries, you know, I realised chocolate actually tastes really different. I mean, most British people know British Cadbury's is very different to Australian Cadbury. And when you're used to Australian Cadbury, you don't like British and vice versa. And then when you go to America, I lived in America for 2 years, their chocolate is really different again. Like, each country, you know, sort of has a palate that people work towards, so you kind of need to get used to those different things as well. And then, you know, you find your different sweetness level and what you like. And people are generally, you know, sort of hardcore passionate about brand names and what you go into, but I was sort of forced to diversify just by living in different countries anyway, so that sort of made me realize what a difference there is. And then, you know, not drinking wine. I know people really get into their wine and have all the different flavours in different regions. So when I started in the bean to bar world and eating that chocolate and realising that, oh, no, I actually don't like some of this and I do like this. And, it sounds like when I'm on tour with people and I say to them, you're going to meet a chocolate you don't like, they kind of look at me horrified. And I'm like, but no, I'm warning you of that so you don't ride off a chocolate shop. Like, you know, if you visit somewhere in Vietnam and you don't like it, don't think the shop's terrible. You might just not like that particular bean. Try something else. It really is just like coffee. You know, one day you have an Ethiopian and you love it. The next day you have a Kenyan and you don't. You have to know, you have to find the regions that you like. So it's a fun journey in experiment in that way.
Chocolate used to be a luxury product, but these days it's become a relatively cheap everyday treat. Unfortunately, someone somewhere is paying the price.
So I must admit, I had no, even though I've consumed chocolate my whole life, I really had no idea of how morally corrupt it actually was. My brother's a coffee roaster, so, you know, they've been to cup, you know, especially Melbourne Australians, we're kind of really aware of that ethical sense and tasting different, and no one's really aware of that in chocolate. Unfortunately, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, but there really is only really four companies in the world, so you can imagine they're quite powerful. And the knowledge isn't even there. Like, most people don't even realise they're not telling you what's in the product. So legally, they only have to tell you the percentage on a chocolate bar. And unfortunately, most people believe that percentage refers to the amount of cocoa in a product. So you're told, oh, eat dark chocolate, it's healthy. And they're going to the supermarket and buying a 90% bar of chocolate and thinking they're being healthy. They're not actually buying 90% cacao. That percentage is made up of other things. So their intentions are good, but they're not actually buying what they think they're buying. So bean to bar, there's only 35 of us in Australia, is we source our beans ethically. We don't add chemicals and preservatives, and it's a very minimalistic ingredients. So, you know, it's the quality of the ingredients, how many ingredients, and the ethics of those ingredients. So that's why I've got a glass factory. I've got nothing to hide. I only use 2, 3, or 4 ingredients. Being a zookeeper, I used to do, you know, 5 zookeeping talks a day. So I always knew I wanted to do education. And it's just that transparency. You go to a coffee roaster, you see a roaster. You go to a brewery, you see a brew tank. Like, we're chocolate makers. There's only 35 of us in Australia. The majority of people are just melting down foreign chocolate. They're not actually making chocolate. So that's the concept of having the open factory, is trying to get people to think about where the things come from. And as I said, there's no such thing as Belgium or Swiss chocolate. There's not a single cocoa tree in Europe. So when I say there's no such thing as Swiss or Belgian chocolate, people sort of laugh at me. They think I'm joking. But when I say that, what I mean is the reason most chocolate is labelled as Swiss or Belgium is because they don't want to actually tell you where the cacao comes from. So, and that's because over 70% of the world chocolate cacao is produced in West Africa, which is notorious for child slave labour. Now, I know you're thinking, but hey, the chocolate bar I buy has a certification on the front of it. Those certifications are made by the same companies. It's self-regulated, it's done, and I'm not going to name names, but you just Google whatever the brand is that you enjoy. Is it ethical? And it will come up. As I said, there's only 4 chocolate companies in the world, and they're all busted again this January. There was undercover journalistic trips to West Africa to the supposed certified child slave labour-free farms, and they had video footage of the 10-year-old children working on the farms. There was an expose in Britain and there was one in Switzerland, both aired this year. So we're talking in 2024. We're not talking 20 years ago. It's still happening. It's still rife. And if you're clever and you read through their wordings and their media responses, it says we do not abide by child slave labour, and we are wanting to be rid of child slave labour, and our aim is to be child slave free, and our goal. So they're all words around. They're not actually saying they are. We're trying to be. But the industry is never going to change because everyone keeps buying their chocolate. So until the public demands that they change, they'll just keep going and doing what they're doing. So slowly, that's what the bean to bar world is trying to, like, educate people. Ask where the beans come from. What is the origin? If, you know, it's from the equator, 20 degrees north and south. That's not Europe.
Ratio is a chocolate factory and so much more. What else can you enjoy when you come to Deb's place?
So at our Brunswick factory, obviously if you're more interested, you can come on tour with me, but it is an open cafe. You can just come in and enjoy hot chocolates. So we have 7 different hot chocolate varieties for you to try. And we also do sort of mimic the coffee industry. They've done it so well. So a bit unusual is we have a cocoa nib pour over. So if you think of a batch brew coffee, so it's just coffee with hot water. This is cacao nibs with hot water slow extraction. So it's an interesting way to try cacao. No milk or sugar added. We also do that in a cold brew, so like a cold brew. We have 7 different chocolate gelatos. And then, of course, we've got some treats for you to enjoy with your hot drink. So we make some Rocky Road, some brownies, some cookies. And, of course, if you just want to come in and grab your chocolate-coated nuts or chocolate bar for a couple of minutes, you can jump into our retail. But, yeah, if you want to sit down and relax, a lot of people come in, read a book. We're actually a very popular destination for first dates, which is quite entertaining for us waitressing. I'm personally a bit of a sucker for a milkshake, and we make a brownie milkshake. So we never try to waste anything here. So we cut the edges off our brownie for the brownie service, and then we dehydrate down those crusts so they're nice and crunchy, and then we literally put that through your brownie. So I call it the lazy person's meal. You don't need to chew, but you get your food and your drink at the same time.
Deb's passion for education is certainly expressed at her factory, but she wants to go bigger. She tells us about the Chocolate Festival coming up in Melbourne on July 7.
My factory, as I said, I educate sort of 10 people at a time on a factory tour, and I have a lot of, you know, food studies, high school students come through, but it's really only educating 10 people at a time. So for the very first time this year on World Chocolate Day, which is July 7th, we're holding Australia's Chocolate Festival, which is by Bean to Bar Makers. So it's super exciting. It's literally the first time ever that we're only going to have pure Bean to Bar in the room. And we're really lucky. We've got cocoa farmers coming from Vanuatu, Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, Solomon Islands and Samoa. So you'll get to meet all the different farmers. And then we're having a little education set. So we'll have the miniature version of all our equipment. So you'll actually get to see chocolate being made, which will make the room smell really lovely as well. And then you'll finally come into a room with all different chocolate makers from all around Australia. And so it's going to be really great for consumers to come in and get exposure to all the chocolate makers they probably haven't met. We've got the two little guys from Perth are coming over, which is really exciting, Two Lost Pilots and Kalo. You guys will recognise Mork, of course. They're the fantastic hot chocolate. So there'll be hot chocolate as well as chocolate bars. But, yeah, I'm sure there's some companies that you probably don't know. And then, yeah, we've got chocolate makers coming over from New Zealand as well. And, again, Vanuatu. So, yeah, it'll be a rare opportunity and you're going to get your money's worth, that's for sure. You can imagine I have over 50 different products, so everyone's going to be doing sampling. You're going to be very chocolate overloaded and happy. So, yeah, the Chocolate Festival, World Chocolate Day, July 7th at Abbotsford Convent.
There's a lot to appreciate about chocolate and the process of making it. What does Deb love most about what she does?
I love seeing people's, like, just that transition of the journey at the beginning. They often tell you, especially with children, they tell you what their favourite brand is and it's a commercial product. But by the time they've come through the factory and then we do the tasting at the end, they're like, oh, I don't like that anymore. I'm not going to buy that anymore. So seeing that transformation really quickly of people's eyes being opened and realizing it in a different taste. And yeah, obviously some people don't like things, of course, but they can still appreciate what you're doing and they sort of get contagious with your passion and they're like, oh, your passion, my passion. And I love having like cheese people through and they geek out and coffee people geek out. Other people who are so passionate about their industry and then they come and realize that there's a whole tasting wheel and the taste variants and they're like, oh, I didn't really think about that. But of course you have that in chocolate. So especially tequila, who knew that tequila had tasting wheels and you can match it with chocolate? So we've done tequila. Obviously, whiskey and wine tastings are pretty popular, but yeah, we've done tequila, vodka tastings and pairings. So, yeah, any maker and producer really geeks out in their own field. It's my entire life. I consume it all the time and I make it and live and breathe it. I smell like it, which is much better than smelling like a zookeeper. But, yeah, I wouldn't have an existence without it.
Anyone who's making 7 different types of chocolate gelato deserves our full attention. Deb Makin is a chocolate lover, craftsperson, educator, and determined small business owner, expanding ideas of how to appreciate and enjoy chocolate. Along the way, she's also empowering consumers. Once people understand the issues embedded in this complicated and often opaque international industry, they are also able to be part of a swing towards ethical consumption and clear-eyed enjoyment. This is The Producers, a Deep in the Weeds production. I'm Danny Vallant. Stay tuned as we talk to some of Australia's best farmers, makers and growers. Follow us on Instagram at Producers Podcast, or contact us via deepintheweeds.com.au.